Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents J.A. Johnstone's The Loner. Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by Eric Messner, Danny Gavigan, David Coyne, Kimberly Gilbert, Richard Cutting, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, James Konacek, Nick DePinto, Thomas Penny, Nora Ashrati, Thomas Keegan, Gregory Gorton, Evan Casey, Dylan Lynch, Tracy Lynn Oliveira, and Tim Pabone. The Loner, Book 14, Hard Luck Money.
Texas State Penitentiary, Huntsville, Texas. Quint Lupo knew something was wrong. 5 years spent behind the thick walls, barbed wire, and iron bars of the prison had honed his instincts to a keen edge. He figured somebody was going to kill him. He had plenty of enemies in there, that was for sure. A man couldn't stay locked up for very long without getting on somebody's bad side. Look at a man wrong in the yard, bump into some fella in the mess hall by accident, and the strain of being in prison made everything seem worse than it really was. When that happened, pride often turned it into a killing manner. When you got right down to it, pride was just about all a locked-up man had left. As Lupo walked across the yard, his eyes moved constantly, searching for the first sign of trouble. It was a hot day, and being outside for a few minutes caused him to sweat through his gray convict's uniform. Squinting against the sun's glare, he glanced up at the brassy Texas sky. He looked at the guard towers in two corners of the yard, where guards with Winchesters were posted, ready to open fire instantly if they needed to. It was Sunday afternoon, and convicts were scattered around the yard. Any other day, most of them would have been out working in the fields. The penitentiary raised an assortment of crops, some to feed the prisoners, others to sell. The convicts had to work hard, but truthfully, it wasn't much harder than it would have been if they'd been trying to eke out a living for their families from their own hardscrabble farms. It wasn't the work. It was the lack of freedom and the memories of being able to come and go as he pleased that got to a man. Lupo remembered vividly how it felt to race across the plains on a good horse. He loved it, even when there was a posse on his trail.
Hey, Lupo.
Lupo stopped and turned. A convict named Leroy Boozer was coming toward him, followed by several of Boozer's friends. The man was tall and burly, with massive arms and a black beard. He looked even bigger and more threatening when compared to Lupo's lean build and gray hair.
What do you want, Boozer?
Boozer was a troublemaker, plain and simple. He spent a week or two every month in solitary as a result of the problems he caused.
I hear you've been saying things about me. Bad things.
I haven't said anything about you. We have never had anything to do with each other.
Yeah? Because some fancy bank robber like you thinks he's too good to associate with the likes of me.
Lupo wasn't going to admit that and make the situation worse, but Boozer was right. The man had been sent to Huntsville because he had beaten his own wife and his brother to death with his bare hands. He thought they'd been fooling around with each other. There was no truth to that suspicion, the way Lupo understood it. He figured the real reason Boozer had killed those two people was because he was blind, crazy drunk at the time. He'd been lucky to escape hanging and sentenced to life in prison instead. Quint Lupo, on the other hand, might have robbed banks and held up trains from one end of Texas to the other, but he had never killed anyone in his life and prided himself on that fact. It was one reason he was determined to serve the remaining 10 years of his sentence and then walk the straight and narrow once he was released. The other reason was his daughter, Kate.
Boozer, I don't want any trouble with you. I give you my word I haven't been talking about you, and I don't intend to. Whoever told you that was just trying to stir up a fight.
Are you calling my friends liars?
Boozer stepped closer, his big hands balled into knobby-knuckled fists.
Are you calling me a liar?
I'm not calling anybody a liar. I'm just saying that someone is mistaken.
That's the same thing!
Lupo glanced around. Several guards were in the yard, and they usually kept their eyes on prisoners like Boozer who were known to start trouble. On that hot afternoon, however, they all seemed to be looking elsewhere. Lupo wondered suddenly if that was a coincidence.
Listen,
I'm tired of listening to you!
Boozer lunged forward, swinging a big fist at Lupo's head. Lupo ducked and let Boozer's fist whip harmlessly over his head. Boozer wavered, a little off balance, stepping in close. Lupo hammered a left and a right into Boozer's midsection. He was quick and straightened up, driving the top of his head into Boozer's face. Blood spurted hotly as Boozer's nose flattened under the impact and he fell to the ground. Before Lupo could take any satisfaction from that, Boozer's cronies tackled him to the ground and started throwing punches. Lupo blocked as many blows as he could, but some got through and slammed into him.
Well, we'll teach you a lesson, bank robber!
Boozer got to his feet and walked over to where Lupo was taking his beating.
Get back, you son of a... get back, dammit!
The convicts fell away to the sides, clearing a path for a brawny man in a blue uniform who was carrying a club. Lupo recognized him as one of the guards, named Hagen.
Start a fight in my yard, will you, Lupo? I'll put a stop to that.
But I didn't...
Get to your feet!
As Lupo was getting back to his feet, Hagen was already swinging his club at Lupo's head.
No more fighting, Lupo!
The Minger Hotel, San Antonio, Texas, several months later. The man called Kid Morgan woke up and stretched his right arm. The red-headed woman cradled in the crook of his left arm stirred as well.
Oh, is it morning?
Lace McCall snuggled against him. The kid squinted at the bright yellow light coming in around the edges of the curtain over the hotel room window.
Actually, I'd say it's closer to noon.
A smile tugged at the corners of his mouth. He asked himself how long it had been since he'd slept this late, this well, and woke up with a beautiful woman in bed beside him. Actually, not that long, he thought wryly. The previous morning, to be precise, and that's what he'd done every morning for the past 2 weeks. But it still seemed like a novelty. After all the danger that had dogged his trail over the past few years, all the grief and tragedy that had haunted him, to spend even a little time in pleasant surroundings was unusual. To spend a month that way was unheard of. And yet that was exactly what he'd been doing. Ever since he and Lace had arrived in San Antonio and had their final showdown with the outlaw they'd been trailing, they had taken life easy and enjoyed being with each other. The Minger was San Antonio's finest hotel, and staying there for such a long time certainly wasn't cheap. Financier and industrialist Conrad Browning could afford it, though. Since Kid Morgan, the young gunfighter with a growing reputation as a fighting man, and Conrad Browning were actually the same person, the kid didn't worry too much about the expense. The hotel had orders to send the bill to Conrad's lawyers in San Francisco, and they would take care of it. That allowed him to enjoy himself. Although he did have one worry nagging at his mind. Lace turned in his arms and raised her head so she could kiss him. The kid responded eagerly. Before things could progress any farther, she pulled back slightly.
We can't just go on being this decadent forever.
I don't see why not.
Well, for one thing, I'm not rich like you are. I have people depending on me.
The kid frowned, and Lace instantly looked like she'd regretted the words. They were a reminder that Conrad Browning's wife was dead, and the only family he had left was his father, the notorious gunfighter Frank Morgan. The kid pushed that thought away, unwilling to let it intrude on his good mood. It had been a long time since he'd been happy for more than a moment here and there, so he was going to hang on to the pleasant interlude as long as possible.
Anytime you need to send money to your mother and your little girl...
You can forget that, kid. I don't mind letting you pay for hotel rooms and dinners at fancy restaurants, even though some folks would say that makes me a whore. But I'd draw the line at you taking care of my mama and daughter. That's my job.
Of course it is.
Lace sat up, swung her legs out of bed, and stood. The kid didn't look at her. She might not be what people would consider classically beautiful, but she had an impact on him like the smash of a bullet. The kid and Lace started to get dressed.
Ace is liable to be downstairs waiting for you.
I know. I owe him an answer. I promised I'd think about his proposition and let him know my decision.
Have you made up your mind? Are you going to take him up on the job offer?
I don't know.
3 weeks earlier, in the aftermath of the deadly quest that had brought them all together, Texas Ranger Asa Culhane had come to see the kid and Lace at the Minger. He'd had a proposition for the kid. In his mind's eye, the kid could still see the badge in the shape of a silver star and a silver circle Culhane had held out to him on an open palm.
This is yours if you want it, kid.
It wasn't everybody who was asked to join the Texas Rangers. The kid had done a lot of things in his life, before he gave up his identity as Conrad Browning, and after. But becoming a ranger wasn't one of them. He'd never even considered anything like that. He didn't think it was a good idea. He had gotten in the habit of drifting and being his own boss. If he was a ranger, he'd be tied down and would have to follow orders. So he was leaning toward rejecting Colhane's offer. On the other hand, he had a great deal of admiration for the crusty old lawman, and if Culhane thought he'd make a good ranger, maybe he would. Culhane had talked his superiors into offering the job to the kid, so in a way, his own reputation was riding on the kid's answer.
I don't want to think about it right now.
The kid reached for his black Stetson with the concho-studded band. Lace shrugged as she finished buttoning the high neck on her dress. Whenever she was on the trail of a wanted outlaw, she wore boots, buckskins, and range clothes. But in town, when she wasn't working, she seemed to enjoy dressing like a lady.
That's up to you.
She turned to face him.
But if it makes any difference, I think you should know I'm going to be leaving pretty soon.
What are you talking about?
I told you I have to take care of my family. I've heard a rumor that Jake Cisneros has been spotted down around Del Rio. There's a $1,500 bounty on his head, and I could sure use it.
The kid had to bite his tongue to keep from saying he could send a wire to Claudius Turnbuckle in San Francisco and have the lawyer send $1,500 to Lace before the day was over. He could have 10 times that much sent to her, and the accounts Turnbuckle managed for him would never miss that drop in the bucket. But if he said anything like that, Lace would have her horse saddled and ride out of San Antonio so quick it would make a person's head spin.
I haven't heard of him.
He's one of those border bandits who raid back and forth across the Rio Grande. The U.S. and Mexico both have rewards out for him.
Sounds like a mighty dangerous man.
He is, but I'm dangerous too.
The kid couldn't argue with that. Before leaving the room, he buckled a gun belt around his hips. Most men didn't carry guns in a big city like San Antonio, but the kid had gotten into a habit of it and found that habit hard to break. The gun on his hip as he and Lace started downstairs wasn't the Colt 45 he had carried for the past few years. It was a Mauser C96 semi-automatic pistol made in Germany that fired 7.63mm rounds. The kid thought he might have trouble coming up with ammunition of that caliber while he was on the drift, so he'd stocked up on it while he was in San Antonio. Lace had one of those Mausers too. They had taken the pair off Warren Latch, the outlaw they had tracked to San Antonio. Being dead and all, he didn't need them anymore. The foreign-made pistol held rounds in the clip that extended below its breech and could spew them out in a hurry. The kid had ridden out of town several times to practice with the weapon and had taken quite a liking to it. If he needed to shoot a bunch of hombres in a short period of time, it would come in handy. He had asked around and found a Mexican artisan who crafted custom leather goods. The old man had fashioned a special holster for the Mauser and equipped it with a spring that made the kid's already fast draw even faster. In his hands, the pistol was a supremely efficient killing machine. Of course, some people said the same thing about Kid Morgan himself. When they reached the lobby of the hotel, the kid saw that Lace's prediction was correct. Asa Culhane was sitting next to a potted palm reading a copy of the San Antonio newspaper. The ranger was actually watching for them, which he proved by folding the newspaper and setting it aside as soon as he spotted them at the bottom of the stairs. Culhane stood up and crossed the lobby. The Minger played host to travelers of all types, from eastern businessmen to Texas cattle barons to dandies who hailed from San Francisco. Culhane stood out as impressive even in that crowd, with his broad barrel chest, his rugged, weathered face, and the Texas Ranger star pinned to his coat. He was the sort most men stood aside from, and that was as true in the lobby of the Minger Hotel as it was anywhere else.
Howdy, kid. Miss Lace.
How are you this morning, Asa?
Well, it ain't quite morning no more, but I'm fine. I ain't even using my cane no more.
I noticed that. I'm glad to see you're doing better.
Yes, so's my captain. He says I've been lollygagging around long enough and it's time for me to get back to my ranger and chores.
You were just on our way to eat dinner. You're welcome to join us, Asa.
Actually, I've been sent to fetch you, kid. The captain wants to have a word with you.
If this is about that badge you offered me, I...
It ain't. This is just something else. If you're interested, though, You'd be helping out the Rangers, even if you don't join up with us regular-like.
The kid was puzzled, even intrigued. He looked over at Lace.
Go ahead if you want to, kid. I'm gonna be busy this afternoon anyway.
Oh?
That's right. I need to start rounding up some supplies for that trip down south.
The kid nodded to Culhane.
All right, Asa. I'll go listen to whatever it is your captain has to say.
Huntsville. When Quint Lupo regained consciousness, his head hurt like blazes. He had already absorbed quite a bit of punishment before Hagen came up and clouted him with that club. Getting knocked out cold made the pain of regaining consciousness worse. But at least the guard hadn't beaten him to death, so Lupo supposed that was something to be thankful for. When he opened his eyes and looked around, he saw whitewashed stone walls that were otherwise bare. The rough sheet he felt underneath him told him he was in a bed. It was the prison infirmary. He had been there before, getting patched up after various scrapes in the yard. Never for anything quite as serious, though. He tried to turn his head, but it made more pain explode inside his skull. That brought footsteps toward the bed.
You awake, Lupo?
A man leaned over so Lupo could see him.
I'll go get the doc.
Lupo recognized the weaselly little convict as Ike Calvert, a trustee who worked in the infirmary. Calvert scuttled off, and a moment later a man in a white coat came over to the bed, the prison doctor, Simon Kendrick. Lupo had heard rumors that Kendrick was an opium addict, and the man's hollow eyes and sallow countenance seemed to confirm it. But he was a fairly competent doctor, despite his personal failings. He touched Lupo's bandaged head gingerly, checking the dressing.
It took half a dozen stitches to close the wound Corporal Hagen's bludgeon left in your scalp, Lupo. You should be careful and not move around too much. Brain injuries can be tricky matters.
I have a brain injury?
Possibly. It's hard to say. That's why we have to proceed carefully. You'll be here for several days before you go back to your regular cell. I don't suppose being out of your cell will bother you much.
No, not at all.
His cellmate, a rustler named Jack Stallings, was a surly hombre, and they had little to do with each other. Lupo was fine with staying in the infirmary, although he wished his head didn't hurt quite so much.
Yeah, well, you should be feeling better by tomorrow. There's nothing for you to do now except rest, so you might as well enjoy it.
That's fine, Doc. Thanks. What happened to Boozer?
The man you assaulted? Nothing, as far as I know.
I didn't...
Lupo had been about to say he hadn't assaulted Boozer. It had been the other way around. Boozer had started that fight. But he recalled how Hagen had walked up to the fight. Boozer and the other prisoners had already dealt out quite a bit of punishment, making him groggy and easy to handle. Hagen hadn't asked any questions, hadn't hesitated to lift his club and bring it crashing down on Lupo's head, as if he had known all along which one of the fighters he was going to hit. Lupo closed his eyes like he wanted to rest, just as Kendrick had told him. He heard the doctor and Calvert move away from the bed. But Lupo wasn't sleeping. He was thinking. His ability to figure things out had made him a successful outlaw for a number of years, before the odds finally caught up to him. He went back over everything that had happened in the yard and could see how it really laid out. The fight hadn't happened because of a misunderstanding. Boozer had jumped him because somebody had told him to. Maybe even slipped him a little payoff of some sort. That somebody had to be Hagen. He might be only a corporal, but it was well known among the prisoners that he had a lot of power inside the prison walls. He was the man to go to if a convict wanted a special favor, and it worked the other way, too. So Hagen had set him up, Lupo concluded. Nothing else really made sense. But why? He'd never clashed with Hagen. He'd had very little to do with the guard and certainly had never defied him. Lupo just wanted to serve his sentence and get out of there. He didn't go looking for trouble. He'd figured out what had happened, but had no idea of the motive and was more tired than he'd thought. Sleep dragged at his brain. He surrendered to it. There would be time enough later to ponder on the mystery, he told himself. By the next day, the intense pain in Lupo's head had receded to a continuous dull throb, and he was able to keep down some beans, a chunk of bread, and a cup of coffee. Surprised he hadn't been moved to the infirmary's regular ward, he was still alone in a separate room with its single, high-barred window. Lupo didn't mind the solitude, although after a while he got bored just lying in bed. By evening, the pain in his head had slacked off considerably when Kendrick came around to check on him.
How much longer do I have to stay here, Doc?
You want to go back to work in the fields, is that it?
Well, I didn't say that.
You're in no shape to return to your normal routine yet, Lupo. If I were you, I'd just count my blessings and stop questioning things.
Fine.
But things weren't fine. He couldn't shake the feeling that something was wrong, that something not readily apparent was going on. Sometime in the middle of the night, light suddenly washed over his bunk and woke him. Blinking against the harsh glare, he tried to push himself into a sitting position. Before he could make it, strong hands grabbed his arms and hauled him off the thin, hard mattress, standing him up so his bare feet were on the cold floor.
Get those clothes on.
Lupo squinted as his eyes adjusted to the light. He made out several hulking forms, filling the room and casting grotesque shadows on the whitewashed walls. The light came from a lantern held high over the head of the man who had given the order. Lupo struggled as his captors yanked his prison uniform off him and began pulling civilian clothes onto his body.
Hurry up, dammit! We don't have a lot of time to waste.
That was definitely Hagen behind the glare of the lantern. There were too many men. Lupo couldn't stop them from dressing him in the new clothes and boots and dragging him out of the room. When they did, he saw that screens had been set up to block off the view of the corridor from the regular ward. If any of the convicts in there had been disturbed by the commotion, they gave no sign of it. Inside the walls, men learned quickly if the trouble didn't have anything to do with them, it was best to pretend they didn't see or hear it. Lupo got a better look at his captors and was surprised to see they were a mixture of guards and convicts, including Leroy Boozer, working together to hustle him along the corridor. He couldn't imagine what had prompted these natural enemies to cooperate, but it couldn't be anything that boded well for him. The infirmary was located inside one of the prison's administrative buildings. The offices they passed were closed and dark. Only one sally port stood between that part of the penitentiary and the outside world. The crazy idea that they were taking him out of the prison entered Lupo's head. But if he was caught out there, he would be considered an escapee. Nobody would believe the story that some guards and prisoners, working together, had forced him out of the prison. He would be brought back, and more years would be added to his sentence. He wasn't a young man by any means, and if he had to spend an extra 10 or 15 years in there, he would probably never leave. At least, not alive.
No, stop it. I don't want to go.
Shut him up. We can't risk anybody who's not in on the plan hearing him.
The next instant, one of the men grabbed Lupo's jaws, forced his mouth open, and shoved a rag into it. They reached the front door of the building, and his captors forced him out into the night air. They went down the steps and across the narrow gravel yard to the sally port. Two guards, armed with rifles, waited there. The gates were open. The guard towers didn't command a very good view of that location. Even if they had, Lupo wouldn't have been surprised to find the guards manning those towers were part of Hagen's scheme.
Wait a minute, where are you taking that man, Hagen?
The group had just started through the sally port. Hagen came to an abrupt stop and turned.
Sergeant Flynn, you're supposed to be off duty tonight.
A big man, wearing only the trousers from a guard's uniform and the upper half of a pair of long underwear, strode toward them. His rusty hair was tangled, and his sweeping handlebar mustache was rust-colored as well.
Does it look like I'm on duty? I couldn't sleep, so I came over from the guard barracks to work on next month's duty rosters. Heard somebody go past in the hall and figured I'd better see what in blazes was going on.
Hagen handed the lantern to one of the other men and walked past the others to confront Flynn.
Well, it's nothing for you to concern yourself with, Sergeant. I have this under control.
I see four of my guards and three prisoners giving a civilian the bum's rush out of here, and I'm not supposed to be concerned?
Flynn peered at Lupo, his eyes narrowing with suspicion.
My God, that's no civilian, that's Quint Lupo! What deviltry are you up to, Hagen? I've had my eye on you, I know you can't be trusted.
Then you should have thrown me out of here a long time before now, Sergeant.
Hagen brought a knife up and around with blinding speed and plunged it into Flynn's chest. Flynn took a half step back, obviously shocked by the unexpected attack. He pawed at the knife with both hands. His knees unhinged, and he fell. Hagen reached down and pulled the knife free.
Too bad. Flynn was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and Lupo killed him during the escape.
Lupo's eyes widened. It was bad enough they were making it look like he'd escaped. If he was blamed for Flynn's murder, every lawman in the state would be looking for him, including the Texas Rangers. He'd be caught, brought back, and hanged. But it would never come to that, he realized, as his captors once again hurried him through the night, past the sally port, out of the walls, and toward a distant stand of trees. He was convinced they were taking him out to kill him. for some reason he couldn't begin to understand. Behind them, the prison remained quiet and sleeping. The group plunged into the thick shadows under the trees. The growth cut off any moonlight or starlight, and when the man carrying the lantern blew it out, the darkness was almost complete.
Now we wait.
Despair made Lupo sag in the grip of the men holding him. He had never been the sort to give up, but he didn't see how he could get away. But maybe, if he could make them think he wasn't going to fight anymore, they would get careless. If one of the guards got close enough to tackle, and Lupo could tear loose just for a moment, he might be able to get his hands on a gun. But he never got the chance. The men who were holding him, one of whom was Boozer, never let up. They kept him pinioned firmly between them. None of the guards came close enough for him to make a grab for a gun either, even if he could have gotten loose.
How long do we have to wait?
Until the fellas I'm working with get here.
So someone else was involved. That put a new angle on the situation, but it didn't clear anything up. Lupo was as much in the dark as ever, figuratively as well as literally. Time didn't have much meaning in such circumstances. Lupo didn't know how much of it had passed when he heard hoofbeats approaching. What sounded like 5 or 6 riders were making their way slowly through the trees.
That's a signal.
Hagen scratched a match into life to light the lantern again. The men holding Lupo had to squint against the glare. So did Lupo. The thought that it might be his last chance flashed through his mind. He tensed his muscles, about to make one more attempt to break free, but Boozer's hands tightened on his arm.
Don't even think about it, Lupo.
The riders started moving again, tall, looming shapes making their way through the trees. They reined to a stop about 20 feet away from the group of guards and convicts. One of the newcomers edged his horse forward. He was a big, barrel-chested man, with an ugly face adorned by a ragged gray mustache that didn't help its appearance.
Is that him?
That's him. Quint Lupo. One of the most successful bank robbers in Texas for a long time. Held up quite a few trains, too. But the law finally caught up to him.
And now the law's about to lose him again.
We're not losing him. We're giving him back.
All right. Bring him on over.
There's one thing you ought to know.
And what's that? You better not have changed your mind about the price you agreed to.
Now that's not it. There's a dead guard back at the prison. A couple of my men are sitting on the body right now, but they'll pretend to discover it as soon as I give the word.
And Lupo will get the blame for the killing?
Well, I don't see any other way to work it.
Oh. I think there's a good chance the boss can turn that to our advantage.
If he does...
I know you'll want a cut of whatever extra we make. You'll have to take that up with the boss. All I'm doing is picking up Lupo and taking him back.
All right.
The stranger motioned to one of the men with him. He led a saddled but riderless horse forward. The stranger drew his gun.
Here's the deal, mister. We've got a use for you. But you ain't the only huckleberry in the world who fits the bill. You understand me? You try to get away or give us too much trouble, and we'll just kill you and leave you laying where you fall. Simple as that.
That meant they would keep him alive, at least for a while. Lupo nodded his head. The stranger jerked a hand toward it.
You have a deal!
Take that out of his mouth. We don't want him to choke before we get him back to the boss's place.
Lupo wanted to meet the mysterious boss. Anybody who could set up something like what was happening had to be a pretty smart man, as well as a powerful one. Boozer pulled the rag out of Lupo's mouth. Lupo worked his jaw back and forth for a moment before he looked up at the stranger.
I'll cooperate with you, mister. Don't worry about that.
Well, good. I was hoping you'd be smart.
Let him go.
Lupo put his foot in the stirrup, grasped the horn, and swung up onto the riderless horse's back.
That just leaves one thing.
Well, that's your lookout, not mine.
You could give me a hand with a chore.
Sorry.
Hagen put his hand in his jacket pocket and brought it out holding a revolver. With no more warning than that, he turned, pointed the gun at Boozer's head, and pulled the trigger. The other guards were ready for the moment. They pulled guns too, and aimed their revolvers at the other two convicts who had helped with the escape. Lupo sat on his horse, his eyes wide with shock and horror. The big ugly man who was in charge of the riders grinned at Hagen.
Looks like Lupo's the only one who got away.
Yeah, lucky son of a bitch, ain't he?
With that, the riders closed in around Lupo and forced him to turn with them. They set a fast pace as they rode off through the trees, fast enough that Lupo worried he would run into something and bash his brains out. The men seemed to know where they were going, and surrounded as he was, he didn't run into anything. They came out of one of the roads near the prison and paused momentarily. Lupo was still stunned by what had happened, but he understood the reasoning behind it. Hagen would claim Boozer and the other two convicts had been part of the escape, too. He and the guards with him would be hailed as heroes for stopping three of the four fugitives. Hagen would probably even claim Lupo must have been the mastermind behind the prison break. Back inside the walls, someone sounded the alarm. Soon, bloodhounds would be baying through the East Texas woods, but Lupo was willing to bet Hagen would mislead the dogs somehow and put them on the wrong scent. Hagen's part in everything would be covered up completely.
Let's go! Hagen won't be able to keep them off our trail forever! Yeah.
The riders pounded along the road, with Lupo still caught in the middle of the group and unable to do anything except go along with them. They rode for miles, following roads and trails that twisted through the thick forest. Lupo had always had a pretty good sense of direction. It came in handy in his line of work, but he knew he would never be able to retrace their path.
Halt! Put the sack on him.
One of the men crowded his horse close to the one Lupo rode and pulled a canvas sack over Lupo's head. A few stray grains of something landed on Lupo's lips. He licked them off and found that they were sweet. It had been a sugar sack. Now it was an effective blindfold. He couldn't see a blasted thing.
You try to sling that off and you'll be sorry.
Don't worry. I don't want to see where we're going.
Well, that's being smart. Come on.
Once more they rode through the night, one of the men leading Lupo's horse. Lupo rocked along in the saddle, waiting to see what was going to happen. The waiting gnawed at his nerves. In the past, he'd always been the one to make plans and take action. As the captive, he was just reacting to what his captors did. After what seemed like several more miles, the leader called another halt.
Take it off him now.
The sugar sack was jerked from Lupo's head. Enough moonlight shone down for him to see his surroundings. They had stopped in a straight, tree-lined lane, running about a quarter mile to a large building gleaming white in the silvery illumination. It was an old plantation house, Lupo realized. East Texas had more in common with the Old South than it did with the frontier. Cotton plantations were plentiful, although many of them had been broken up after the Civil War when Reconstruction stripped the owners of their riches. The riders moved toward the mansion, which had massive columns flanking its entrance. When they got closer, Lupo could see the place wasn't in as good a repair as it had seemed from a distance. The white paint was flaking and peeling in places, and the stucco on the walls had started to crumble. The flower beds along the front of the house were overgrown with weeds. It had been a fancy, elegant home at one time, but no longer. The leader reined to a stop in front of the portico.
You've been pretty well behaved so far, Lupo. If you know what's good for you, you'll keep on acting like that. Boss is a fair man, but he won't put up with any trouble.
Can you get it through your head that I don't want to cause trouble? Hell, you fellas busted me out of prison. I'm grateful to you.
You look like you wanted to put up a fight back there, where we met up with Hagen.
That's because I thought Hagen was gonna kill me. I didn't trust him. Boozer and those other two convicts shouldn't have trusted him, that's for sure.
Well, you're right about that. Do we need to tie your hands before we take you to see the boss?
Nope. All I want to do is thank the man.
The leader dismounted and drew his gun.
Don't take offense, Lupo. No new man gets to see the boss without being covered. You can dismount now.
None taken. Can't blame a man for being careful.
The other men dismounted as well. Some of them tended to the horses while two men drew their guns and followed the leader and Lupo into the house. A lamp in a wall sconce burned in the foyer. Its glow revealed the shabby former elegance of the house's exterior continued inside. The once thick rug on the floor was threadbare, and the wallpaper was stained in places. The furnishings, which in the plantation's heyday would have been kept shined and polished to a high gleam by house slaves, were dull and tarnished. Big Ugly led the way along a corridor to a pair of double doors.
It's Brattle, Mr. Gray.
Come.
Brattle went first. Lupo followed with the guns of the other two men covering him. He stepped into a room that appeared to be a combination library and office. Bookshelves covered three walls. They were lined with dark, leather-bound volumes, but the layers of dust on the books told Lupo no one had disturbed them in quite a while. The sour smell of mold and mildew hung in the air. Lupo's nerves crawled. Everything about the place reminded him of death and decay, including the man standing in front of the old desk that dominated the room. He was tall and thin, probably in his 30s, dressed in a dark suit. He might have been handsome if his face hadn't been gaunt to the point that he resembled a cadaver. His skin, which seemed more pale when contrasted with his shock of coal black hair, added to his corpse-like appearance. When he smiled, he was somehow transformed and didn't seem nearly as grotesque. He stepped forward and extended a hand with long, slender fingers.
Quint Lupo, I've heard a great deal about you. It's an honor to meet you.
Lupo took the man's hand, which was smooth and cool, and shook it.
Well, most folks wouldn't consider it an honor to meet a bank robber.
I'm always glad to meet any man who's good at what he does. And you are one of the best, Mr. Lupo. Or should I call you Quint?
Whatever you'd like. And I wasn't good enough to stay out of prison.
Yes, but you've left those iron bars and gray walls behind now, haven't you?
The man let go of Lupo's hand and gestured toward a red leather chair in front of the desk. The chair had a couple of small rips in the upholstery, but appeared to be in better shape than many of the furnishings.
Please have a seat. Brad'll fetch us some brandy.
Sure, boss.
Brad'll slid his gun into its holster. The other two men stayed in the background, alert and clearly ready for trouble.
Cigar?
The pale, gaunt man reached for a humidor on the desk.
Sure.
He took the thick cylinder of tightly rolled tobacco the man held out to Lupo. Brattle brought over a silver tray with a couple of snifters of brandy on it.
You wouldn't think someone as large and formidable looking as Brattle here would be an excellent butler, but he is.
I've told you, boss, I ain't a butler. You can call me your segundo if you want.
I'll call you whatever I please.
Brattle set the tray on the desk.
Help yourself, Lupo.
Gray went behind the desk and sat down in a large brown leather chair. Lupo picked up one of the snifters and took a sip. The fiery liquor was good, although Lupo was far from an expert on such things. When he was on the Owlhoot Trail, he drank beer and whiskey. Gray took a cigar from the humidor for himself and fired up both smokes.
You're bound to be wondering why I've gone to so much trouble to have you brought here, Quint.
The thoughts crossed my mind.
I'm sorry it had to be such an unpleasant experience for you. My influence inside the walls goes only so far. We needed you in the infirmary in order to be able to secure your freedom.
Well, I reckon Boozer had it a lot worse in the end.
What's he talking about?
Hagen brought some of the convicts in on the deal. Of course, we knew he'd do that to put Lupo in the infirmary, but he used him in the actual escape, too.
Well, that was running quite a risk.
Not really. As soon as he turned Lupo over to us, Hagen and the guards with him killed the three cones.
Really?
He had to kill a guard who wasn't in on the plan, too. He figures he'll put the blame for that killing on Lupo.
That's interesting. Seems there's going to be quite a high price on your head after this, eh, Quint?
For breaking jail and killing a guard? I'd say so, yeah. Even though I didn't do either of those things.
Ah, but the authorities don't know that. I was going to offer you a very attractive proposition anyway, but it seems now you have even more reason to accept my offer, since we can help you stay out of the hands of the law.
Just what the hell is it you want from me, anyway?
I want you to do what you do best, Quint. I want you to rob banks.
The group of horsemen came to a stop on top of a high hill, overlooking the thickly wooded valley where the Colorado River wound its way toward the Gulf of Mexico. On the other side of the river lay the town of LaGrange, dominated by the big stone Fayette County Courthouse with its clock tower.
The bank's right there on the square, so the streets will be busy around it. Nobody will be expecting trouble, so we ought to be able to get in and out without too many problems.
Lupo shifted in his saddle and felt the weight of the revolver on his hip.
I'd feel better about things if you'd give me some bullets for this gun.
You know that ain't the way Mr. Gray does things. You can swear you're with us up one way and down the other, Lupo. But until you've proven it, none of us are going to trust you. You gots to earn it.
What am I going to do? Start yelling for the law as soon as we ride in? If I did that, I'd be sticking my head right in a hangman's noose.
I'm not the one who makes the rules. That'd be Mr. Gray.
Alexander Gray was still in that crumbling old plantation house 80 miles away, waiting for his hand-picked crew of bank robbers to return with the loot. Before Lupo had set out with Brattle and the others for LaGrange, Gray had shown Lupo the freshly printed wanted poster. Lupo's photograph was on it, an improvement over the days when wanted posters had relied on drawings, along with the information that he was wanted for the murder of a guard at the Texas State Penitentiary, as well as for escaping from that prison. A reward of $2,500 for his arrest, or for his body, was offered, since the bounty would be paid whether he was dead or alive. The wanted poster made that clear in big black letters.
You'll appear to be in charge, Quint, although Brattle will really be calling the shots. But your leadership will be important. If you perform well, things will get better for you. You have my word on that.
It seems loco to me.
I don't wear a mask. I don't get a gun with bullets in it. I'll be the only one running any risk in this job.
I've explained this to you. You're already a wanted man, but none of the others are. But it doesn't matter if you're recognized. As for the gun, that's simply a precaution.
I don't stand to gain a damn thing by double-crossing you.
And I don't stand to gain anything by giving you the opportunity to double-cross me. Just be patient, Quint.
It wasn't like he had much choice in the matter, Lupo thought as he looked down across the river at LaGrange. Gray had him over a barrel. The man could turn him into the law at any time.
All right. Let's get this done.
They followed the road, zigzagging down the side of the steep hill and rode across the wooden bridge spanning the Colorado. It was the middle of a warm June afternoon. The square was busy, with a number of wagons parked in front of businesses and horses tied to hitch racks. Not as busy as a Saturday, the day when farmers and ranchers in the area came into town, but still, too many people for Lupo to feel comfortable about what they were doing. He and his companions moved along the street at an easy pace, not doing anything to draw attention to themselves as they approached the bank. It sat on a corner of the square in a red brick building with various offices on its second floor. Next to it was Al's grocery store, where Lupo, Rattle, and the other men reined in and dismounted. After tying up their horses, Lupo and Brattle moved along the boardwalk and went into the bank, while the other men drifted into the grocery store. Lupo wanted to take a look around first, and of course Brattle wasn't going to let him out of his sight. The other outlaws would make their way into the bank, one by one, after approximately 10 minutes had passed. Right away, Lupo saw the place had a row of teller's cages to one side, several desks behind a railing where the bank executives did their business, and the massive vault in the middle and to the back. All the tellers were occupied with customers, and several more customers stood at a marble counter filling out slips to make deposits or withdrawals. The key to a successful bank robbery, Lupo knew, wasn't the physical layout of the place. It was the people involved. Without being obvious about what he was doing, he studied the two men sitting at the desks. The middle-aged one, well padded with fat, would be the bank president. He had a broad, friendly face, and the reddish tinge of his nose revealed he liked to drink a little too much. He wouldn't be a danger. Lupo would stake his life on it, which might well be what he was doing. Ah, but the other man, the younger, slimmer one with the eager expression on his face, as if he actually enjoyed the paperwork he was doing. He might present a problem. He was the bank vice president, more than likely, and he'd have his eye on the president's job, which meant he would be quicker to defend the customer's money. Ambition nearly always equaled foolhardiness. In one of the drawers of the young man's desk would be a gun, and when the holdup started, he'd be tempted to make a grab for it. Lupo caught Brattle's eye and gave a tiny nod toward the bank vice president. Brattle nodded back to show he understood what Lupo was telling him. He would be ready if the vice president tried anything. The three tellers were men approaching middle age, all with the resigned look of hombres who knew they would never do anything else with their lives. It was possible one might put up a fight, but it was just as possible they would be more concerned with their own hides and would cooperate with the robbers. Lupo would keep an eye on them, of course, but he really didn't expect any trouble from that direction. That left the customers. They were a mix of housewives depositing butter and egg money, local businessmen, and a couple of rangy men in cowboy hats and boots who probably owned spreads in the area. Those cattlemen weren't carrying guns, which was good, because they looked like the sort of hombres who would use them. Lupo preferred they not be there, even unarmed. Maybe the ranchers would finish up their business and leave before the other members of the gang were in position, he thought. One of the cattlemen did indeed stroll out a few minutes later, but the other lingered to jaw with the bank president. Lupo stood at the marble counter, holding a pencil and pretending to do some figuring on a piece of paper as he watched the other members of the gang drift in casually. Nobody in the bank did more than glance idly at them, but if they stood around doing nothing for very long, people would start to get suspicious. It was time to move. Lupo looked over at Brattle and nodded. Brattle reached for the bandana tied around his neck and pulled it over the lower half of his face. The other robbers did the same. Lupo was the only one with his face still uncovered as he pulled his gun and stepped back so he could cover the whole room.
Everybody put your hands up and stand still. This is a holdup.
The rancher who'd been talking to the bank president whirled around and took a step toward the gate and the railing. Lupo pointed his gun at the man and eared back the hammer. The rancher stopped in his tracks and glared at Lupo, but didn't move anymore except to raise his hand slowly. He had no way of knowing Lupo's gun was empty. Unless he looked closely enough to see that no bullets were visible in the Colt cylinder, Lupo hoped the man wouldn't be that observant. Brattle had his gun pointed at the Vice President, who had bolted up out of his chair at the sound of Lupo's command. The young man froze, just like the rancher, as Brattle was quick to cover him. One robber kept his gun on the customers, while the other three moved in on the teller's cages. They pulled out canvas sacks from under their shirts and tossed them to the frightened tellers.
Fill them up!
Lupo moved closer to the railing and pointed his gun at the bank president.
You're going back there to open the vault now, friend. Do it and no one gets hurt.
I can't open it. I don't know the combination.
The hell you don't. Get back in there and do it now.
You better do what he says, Carl. I recognize this fella. He's that mad dog son of a bitch. Gun Lupo, who broke out of Huntsville a week ago. Killed a guard on his way out, the newspaper said.
That's right, Carl. So move or I'll kill you too. Get somebody else to open the vault.
Holding his hands up in plain sight, the bank president struggled to his feet.
I'm going.
His eyes widened, and he looked like he was about to choke. Instead of moving to follow Lupo's order, he suddenly clasped both hands to his chest. Suddenly, he pitched forward across his desk. That was so unexpected, Brattle turned to look, giving the vice president the chance he had been waiting for. Reaching down, he jerked open a drawer in his desk and plucked out a gun. He never had a chance. Brattle's pair of slugs ripped open the young man's chest. The gunshots ended the possibility of emptying the vault. Not enough time for that now. But the canvas bags were already bulging with loot scooped from the teller's drawers.
Move! Get to the horses!
He swung his gun back and forth, keeping the rancher and the other customers covered, as the masked men ran for the door and burst through it. Lupo was the last one out, and the last one to hit the saddle. As Lupo wheeled his horse, the rancher ran out of the bank with the gun the vice president had dropped and started shooting at the robbers. Brattle returned the fire, his slugs striking the rancher and twisting the man off his feet. The six outlaws galloped past the courthouse and headed for the river. As he rode hard, leaning forward over his horse's neck to make himself a smaller target, Lupo reached into the saddlebags for the items he had told Gray he would need after he'd scouted the job. He pulled out a bundle of three sticks of dynamite tied together with twine. Their fuses were twisted together. As the horses pounded onto the bridge over the river, Lupo guided his mount with his knees and used his other hand to snap a match into life with his thumbnail. Sparks flew in the air as he lit the fuses, hanging back to let the others get well ahead of him. A glance over his shoulder told him several men had mounted up and were galloping in pursuit. When he reached the far end of the bridge, Lupo wheeled his horse and gave the dynamite an underhanded toss, sending it bouncing and rolling about 40 feet away onto the span. Somebody was shooting at him from the town. He turned his horse and galloped for the hill. Behind him, the pursuers had raced onto the bridge. The bridge was long enough that they weren't caught in the explosion, but the blast made the horses rear up in panic. Several men were thrown from their saddles. Debris from the explosion rained down around them. Another bridge was located 2 miles upstream. The closest bridge downstream was 5 miles away. By the time a posse could get across the Colorado and give chase, the bank robbers would have an insurmountable lead. That was just the way Lupo had planned it. The job would have to be considered a success, even though the take might not be as big as Gray expected. Lupo had passed his first test. He had been recognized, sure, and that would get him in deeper trouble with the law. But the undeniable truth to that old saying was that they could only hang him once. The murder of that prison guard was enough to doom him to spending the rest of his life as a fugitive. His plans to go straight were ruined. He would never be able to give Katie any sort of a normal life. She would always be the daughter of an outlaw and a killer. He'd wait for his chances to turn the tables on Alexander Gray. If he had to be an outlaw again, then by God, he would be the boss outlaw. 3 men died in the LaGrange bank robbery. The bank vice president, the rancher who'd been shot, and the heavyset bank president, whose heart gave out from the fear and strain of the holdup. The robbery itself netted a little under $9,000. Alexander Gray took about a third of that, leaving $1,000 apiece for the men who had done the actual work. That difference in the payoff might make a nice wedge to drive between Gray and the other men sometime in the future, Lupo thought. A few days after the LaGrange job, the bounty on Quint Lupo rose to $4,000. 2 weeks later, Lupo, Brattle, and the rest of the gang held up the bank in Hallettsville, down on the Lavaca River. Nobody was killed, although a townsman caught a slug through the thigh during a brief flurry of shots as the outlaws were riding out of town. 3 weeks after that, they stopped a train near Seguin and emptied the safe in the express car. The express messenger and the conductor both died in that holdup when they tried to put up a fight. Three things remained constant during that stretch. Lupo was the only one of the gang who wasn't masked during the jobs, so he was recognized each time. With each new crime, the bounty on him was raised, especially after they hit the train. With the money the railroad kicked in, the reward on Lupo's head rose all the way to $12,000. The third thing was that Alexander Gray took approximately a third of the loot as his share, even though he didn't run any of the risks. It was time to make his move, Lupo sensed. No one had ever tracked them back to the old plantation. He knew all the tricks of throwing a posse off his trail, so the place was their sanctuary, where they could take it easy between jobs. The men grew more and more restless, though. Each had a pretty good poke of stolen loot built up, with nothing to spend it on. Whiskey, women, cards. All those things called to the outlaws, but Gray insisted they had to lie low. Lupo planned to use that dissatisfaction to his advantage. He wasn't guarded all the time, as he had been at first, although Gray still didn't trust him enough to allow him to carry a gun while he was there. At least when he went on a job, his gun had bullets in it. So far, he hadn't had to fire it. Brattle and the other men had taken care of all the gunplay. He was in his second floor room one evening when a knock sounded on the door. He'd been sitting in a chair, smoking one of Gray's cigars, and reading a book he'd taken from the library downstairs, some far-fetched adventure yarn by an Englishman named Stevenson. Some of the pages were crinkled from water damage, but he could still read them. He set the book and the cigar aside.
What is it?
Boss wants to see you downstairs.
Lupo stood. It had been a week since the last job, so he figured Gray probably wanted to start talking about the next one. Lupo opened the door and grinned at Brattle, standing there wearing his six gun and Stetson as usual.
What's so funny?
I was just remembering how Gray called you his butler the night you first brought me here.
The boss gets some funny notions in his head. Do I look like a butler to you?
No, you look like a bank robbing outlaw.
Damn right. Come on.
They started down the stairs, covered by a frayed runner.
Do you know what this is about?
Nope. The boss don't let me in on his plans unless he figures I've got a good reason for knowing about him. He just said to fetch you.
Well, I suppose I'll know soon enough.
I expect so.
Brattle escorted Lupo to the library. Lupo didn't say anything else as they walked through the plantation house. A few times lately, he had made some idle comments to the other men about how they were running all the risks while Gray claimed the lion's share of the loot. The men seemed to resent that arrangement, which was encouraging for Lupo's long-term plans. So far, he hadn't approached Brattle in the same way. Since Brattle was closer to Gray than the other men, it seemed a bigger risk. The last thing Lupo needed was somebody telling Gray that he was trying to stir up a mutiny. Brattle opened the door to the library, and they both walked in. Lupo was surprised to see Alexander Gray sitting at the desk with a stranger in the red leather chair in front of him. Gray looked up with a smile of greeting on his lean face and got to his feet.
Come in, Quint. We have a visitor I want you to meet.
The stranger stood too and turned around. He was a dour, medium-sized man with slightly graying dark hair above a tanned face. He was dressed all in black, including his gun belt and the grips of the Colt he carried. A black Stetson sat on the corner of Gray's desk.
This is Angus Morrell. Angus, you know all about Quint Lupo.
Yeah, I should.
Morrell held out a hand.
Howdy, Lupo.
Lupo shook hands with the man.
How do you know about me?
You may have wondered how I got those wanted posters on you, Quint. Angus takes care of things like that for me. In fact, he's brought a new one tonight.
Gray picked up a sheet of paper from his desk and extended it toward Lupo.
Here, take a good look at it.
$15,000. I'm worth a lot of money.
You certainly are.
There was something about Gray's voice that made Lupo glance up sharply. Brattle was still behind him. Before he had a chance to react, Brattle hit him upside the head with the butt of his pistol.